From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. In a case that's garnered national media attention, the U.S. Coast Guard recently announced it was suspending its search for two teens who went missing off of Florida's Atlantic coast on July 24th. We'll take a closer look at what's involved in Coast Guard search and rescue operations, other local efforts to find stranded boaters, and the importance of boater safety education. Plus, Fort Myers singer, songwriter, and guitarist Frankie Colt performs live in studio. Colt is currently recording a new album titled Howl, set for release this summer. Earlier this year, she was invited to perform at the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, Texas. And this week, Colt premieres a new music video for her song Lion's Heart. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Singer, songwriter, and guitarist Frankie Colt will perform live in studio today. The Naples native and up-and-coming musician performed earlier this year at the South by Southwest Music Festival in Austin, Texas. You can catch her live performances regularly in venues around Southwest Florida. And this week marks the premiere of her new music video for one of her original songs, Lion's Heart. That's coming up later this hour. But first, last Friday, U.S. Coast Guard officials announced the suspension of an aggressive 8-day search for teenagers Perry Cohen and Austin Stefanos, who went missing off Florida's Atlantic coast after embarking on a fishing trip July 24th. The search involved a variety of aircraft, boating vessels, and hundreds of people stretching as far north as Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. This tragedy has garnered national media attention. And while we may never discover what happened with the young teens, the case has shown a spotlight on the importance of boater safety in education. Joining me now in studio is Clint Dawson. He's a pilot and current president of the Sundown Patrol of Lee County. Members of this nonprofit pilots club have been patrolling the region's shorelines looking for boaters in distress dating back to the mid-1960s. Clint Dawson, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you very much.
And we're also talking with Bob Bellevue. He's retired from the U.S. Navy as a first-class petty officer and has taught boating classes as a senior navigator with the United States Power Squadron for more than 30 years, both with the organization's Boston chapter and here on Marco Island. U.S. Power Squadrons is the world's largest recreational boating organization. Bob, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. You can connect with our guests with your phone calls to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Bob, I wanted to start with you a little bit here. Just looking at the Coast Guard operation that really went into looking for these kids, I mean, it involved so many different people, law enforcement agencies, helicopters, different aviation vessels, and then boating vessels as well. And looking as far north as North Carolina and Cape Hatteras, can you maybe give us some insight into, you know, why a search would cover such a vast area?
One of the basic problems with boating off the coast of the United States on the East Coast is the Gulf Stream. Mm-hmm. That moves at almost 4 miles an hour. And you know, every hour that you're out there, it travels just that much further. And when the Coast Guard or any of the private organizations that get out there and fly around looking for people, when you have something like that, that you have to combat every 24 hours, you move 700 miles away from where you started. So the area just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, so that the problems with letting people know where you're going to go and when you're going to be back and all of those things are very, very important. And we push that particular phase in our safe boating class called a thing called a float plan. And the float plane is no more than some mature adult that you know, that you tell them where you're going to be and how long you're going to be there. And if you're not back by a certain time and don't call them, please get those organizations going, like the Coast Guard. And people that are out flying around looking for you, because every minute you're out there, you're further and further and further. Even the Gulf Stream is a gear that travels at around a mile an hour. So the thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The distance you have to go out, you're really challenged when that happens.
And Bob, you know, just a little bit before the show, you were sharing with me a story I was hoping you'd share with our listeners as well about some Naples boaters not too long ago and what happened when they didn't have a float plant.
Well, this happened about 6-7 years ago, something like that. A father and son and a friend went fishing out of Naples, and they didn't tell anyone where they were going. And they didn't show up that night, but no one knew. No one was looking for it. The wife and the father and son and mother were estranged, so that never got out. So they were gone over two, almost 3 days before anyone started looking for them. And they didn't find the boat for almost 2 months. And even though I know there were people flying around looking for them and everything else, the boat showed up from Naples. All right, almost 2.5, close to 3 months later, on the shore, on a beach, tipped upside down with the owner, the father, in the bow. And that shore, when you ask people this, they're astounded, was Cape Canaveral. Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, it's easy to get there when you study the dynamics of a place like the Gulf of Mexico and a place like the Gulf Stream. It never stops. It goes on 24 hours a day fighting us and you to do that. So if you tell someone where you're going, at least the people who go out and fly looking for you have a chance to where to start looking, because they understand the waters too.
And now, Bob, you know, I think I might have shared this with you earlier, but when I first moved here, you know, a little more than a decade ago, I remember going out with some friends to celebrate, and we rented a pontoon boat and had a great day out on Estero Bay. But really, none of us had any experience with boating. I don't think there was anybody in the boat who even knew how to read channel marks. Do you find it surprising or maybe even a little alarming how easy it is for folks to, you know, just rent a boat and go out there and they really don't know what they're doing?
The people that rent them, unfortunately, are only out there to rent them. They're not out there to teach them how to do it. There are, I think, close to 14 states now that require people who take a boat out have to have a license to drive it. Someone on the boat has to have a license. Mm-hmm. And that license includes a 5-week course or 5-class course, like the Power Squadron and the Coast Guard Auxiliary give for this. And it tells you all about the channel marks and everything else. And I can remember in 1970 when my brother-in-law and I, who had been racing sailboats in small bays up north, and we really never knew what the channel marks were, except that between the red and the green, it was safe. That was it. Now, the people today really have to know it, because there is so much going on out there, so many boats. And you have to know who has the right of way and all of these other things. It's very, very important. And fortuitously, the Coast Guard and the Power Squadron do this. The only difference between the Coast Guard and the Power Squadron is that they have social events. The Power Squadron does. It really is the only difference between the two. It is a imperative. Now, when we decided to do this, we had been boating from 1941 to 1970, 30 years, and still didn't know, but it wasn't being pushed. But my brother-in-law and I did this. We took all the courses and did all of this. Then I started taking boats from Boston down to Florida and was able to navigate and do all of those things. So it really is a wonderful thing to understand all of that and how bad the sea can be. The sea can be just as bad as an airplane up in the air running into thunderstorms. Isn't that true?
Oh, yeah. You definitely don't want to get a small craft into thunderstorms.
No, so it's very, very difficult.
Bad idea.
And as I understand it, under Florida law, if you were born on or after January 1st, 1988, there is some kind of boater education or safety that is required, and then you would have some kind of boating ID, so that if you were ever stopped, you would have your boating ID and a photo ID there. But what about the rest of us who were born before 1988? Do you think that requirement should maybe extend to everybody?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had a first cousin that invited me up to his home in Maryland to teach his children this because the courses had already started. He couldn't do it. So I went up and spent a week teaching the children all of this so they could go take the course, or to take the test to get this license. To do this, so they were able to take his boats out. He had some boats. So that's so important that be done with everyone. It's like driving a car. You don't give your key to a car to someone that doesn't have a license the same way you shouldn't with a boat. They're just as dangerous.
Right.
They really are.
Today we're taking a closer look at boater education and safety and search and rescue operations. We're talking with United States Power Squadron Senior Navigator Bob Bellevue and President of the Sundown Patrol of Lee County, Clint Dawson. Listeners can join our conversation, add your comments or questions by calling 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Clint, I wanted to turn to you for a moment here. As I mentioned earlier, the Sundowners have been operating here in our area since 1965. Yeah. But it seems like it's something of a little bit of a secret. Not a lot of people tend to know that you're there. Do you find that to be the case?
Yes, I find that to be the case very much so. As I go around the county and talk about the Sundowners, a lot of people have no clue that we even exist or what we do. But every weekend we're up in the skies that the weather's permitting, searching for distressed boaters with the Coast Guard. And that is a little disheartening.
And how does someone become a member of the Sundowners? Do you need to be a pilot, or do you really just need to have the desire to want to volunteer?
Well, no. People can join what we call an observer. There's two parts to the club. We have a pilot's club, which is the main thing, and then we have the observers. And observers do not have to fly. They don't even have to get in the plane if they don't want to. It's up to them. But they only pay $15 a month, and approximately every other month they get to go up for a free plane ride, and count boats and talk to the Coast Guard and see this beautiful coastline that we have out here. It's really spectacular.
So the view is kind of a reward in and of itself, even if you're not necessarily involved in an actual rescue, so to speak.
Oh, yes. To see the coastline of Lee County is just spectacular from the air. It's definitely will put another view on the way you see this area.
Do you know roughly how many members are in the club presently?
There's approximately 150 total. Of which I would say there's roughly 80 pilots. Now, there's a lot of snowbirds that counts too. So the numbers fluctuate as the season goes on. And if you want to be a pilot and join the club, you can do that too. I mean, we have meetings. Actually, it'll be one tonight at Base Ops at Page Field, second floor, to go to the meeting room on your right-hand side at 7 o'clock. So anybody that wants to know more about the Sundowners, come on out. Everybody's welcome.
All right, excellent. And about do you know roughly how many rescues the Sundowners have been responsible for or been involved in? Or it seems like it happens on a pretty regular basis.
There was one just last month where a boater went out about 26 miles off of Sanibel, Captiva, and even though he had his marine band radio and everything, nobody was picking him up because he was out so far. But because we fly at about 1,000 feet and we have a marine band radio, the way radios work, we were able to pick him up. So when the pilot that was flying the plane, he noticed it and then contacted RSW, which we have to do because in ordinary to go out past the ADIZ, the distance that we're only allowed to fly without a flight plan.
Gotcha.
In customs. So he contacted them and got it all taken care of and then flew out. And meanwhile, the Coast Guard was notified and CETO, and they came out. And they actually said that they would have never found him because it was almost sunset.
Wow.
And because our plane was flying over top of him, they were able to find him. And the plane stayed there until they got all under tow and then flew back in. So.
Right. And, you know, flying and maintaining aircraft comes at no small cost to anybody, much less a nonprofit organization. Where does the funding come from to maintain these efforts?
Well, it comes from monthly dues, and we also hold fundraisers. The biggest fundraiser we have is what we call the Hangar Dance in November. I don't know if anybody knows, ever been to a hangar dance. They have a big hangar on Page Field that they let us use. We open it up, and we have a big brass band. We have people that come in and dance. It's quite a social event, kind of on the World War II era. And it's really spectacular. And anybody's invited to that, too. You just go on sundownpatrol.org, and you can find tickets to it. So that's how we kind of pay for this.
All right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't know that I ever would have thought of it, but of course an airplane hangar would be the perfect venue for something like that. That sounds perfect. And Bob, maybe you can just give us a little more general background just on United States Power Squadron. And you know, it seems like there's chapters all over the country. I believe we have 11 just within our listening area here in Southwest Florida.
That's correct. Yeah, the big thing that the squadron gets into as far as safety is number one. They offer free inspections to the boats, and the Coast Guard does that also. And with this, you get an inspection sticker that the Coast Guard, if they ever stop you and do random inspections, which they do quite often, if they see that sticker, they know that you have been inspected, that all your life jackets are up to snuff, all of your flares, which you're supposed to have, and they're supposed to be not outdated, and everything, all safety equipment you're supposed to have. And, of course, a lot of people think that, gee, I have a cell phone. That's a big deal, right?
Yeah, it won't work out there.
It'll work, but only for a couple of miles.
Yeah.
But then that's useless after that.
Well, you know, the better thing that the Coast Guard really needs to mandate is a personal ELT.
ELT?
Okay, it's a personal locator.
Okay.
And what it is it sends out a signal on 406 megahertz. It sends it up to the satellite, which now NOAA operates, and it'll send out a longitude, latitude, your coordinates. It says, help, I'm in trouble. It'll pinpoint right where you're at, and the Coast Guard then comes down. They notify the Coast Guard from NOAA, and presto, you're found.
Now, are these devices readily available now, just not mandated?
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of people that – we fly over to the Bahamas a lot. So when you're flying over all the water, people like to have their own personal one. Now, we just installed the new ELTs on our aircraft, which the way FAA mandated, you had to have them. And they operated on a 122 frequency, and now they're all 406. And they send out a digital frequency, like I said, the NOAA. So as soon as you push the button, they know where you're at. And I think, Bob, I think you would agree.
They have a lot of those on the newer radios that go into boats. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. You push a certain button, and immediately a signal is sent back to the Coast Guard with your latitude and longitude.
Yep.
And they also have the small devices that get activated when they go into water called EPIRBs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're the same frequency that you were talking
about. Yeah, they are.
And that's not a personal device, but I think technology will get there eventually that you have one and you just stick in your thing like a pen eventually.
Yeah, well, they have them small as a cell phone now. And actually, we fly over to the Bahamas a lot. Most of the time we have one person that has it clipped to their personal flotation. And that's another thing. I mean, everybody should be wearing personal flotation when they get out in the water. We've mandated it in our aircraft. When we fly out over water, everybody's mandated to have a life vest on before the plane takes off. You have to have it on because when you hit the water, the only thing that's coming out of that plane is what's on your body.
Right.
you know. So it's mandated in our club as safety. I mean, and it should be the same thing, I would think, on the Coast Guard, the personal flotation, you know, even though they don't blow up until either you hit the water or you pull the cord. And everybody should have to have these on their body, not just in the boat.
Mm-hmm. Well, they do. There is a law in the state here in Florida that states that children of a certain age have to have them on.
Yeah.
And I think it's 12 in Massachusetts. I think it's 7 down here. They must have them on at all times, period, unless they're down below. And those should be to higher ages. It really should be.
Because
try and put a life jacket on in the water is virtually impossible.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, like if you fall over, you can't reach back in the boat and get your life vest.
No.
It should be on your body, and that would save a lot of these incidents that we're having, particularly even in this area where we were called out to look for the two gentlemen that had the kayak. Mm-hmm. Well, they should have had personal flotation on, you know, before they went out. And
you know, I know a lot of people just don't that they don't have that attitude. You know, particularly when they're in a kayak, they don't think anything bad could really ever happen. Do you think that perhaps it's more of an issue with inexperienced boaters? Do you think they're maybe more confident than they should be than folks who are experienced?
Even experienced boaters do the same thing. They ignore it.
Yeah.
It's really terrifying because it happens so quickly that you have no control of it. The whole thing of all of this is because not only are they inexperienced, they're not educated. That's the whole deal. And they really need this education, and that's only going to become by mandating, like the rest of the 14 states that have it. Everyone should have it.
Yes.
They should have that as a law. You have a license to do this and must be educated. Everyone.
Yeah, because even last weekend, I believe, we were flying out and we had a boater, again, about 20 miles out, who had engine problems. Well, you don't reach much on shore when you're 20 miles out with a regular marine band radio.
No.
And again, you know, the Coast Guard had to be notified to go out and get them because they had engine problems. And here's the funny thing. Four adults in a boat, none of them could swim.
Oh.
They're 20 miles out. That's not good.
No. That's putting it mildly. Yeah, yeah. Well, Bob, can you maybe give us – I know this might be difficult to narrow down, but maybe highlight in, you know, your 30-plus years of experience teaching boating courses some of the most common mistakes folks make.
Well, one of the big things – now, it states that all boats must have flares in them, okay? Now, if you're out 20 miles and you all of a sudden your engine dies and you say, well, I got to get help. I'm going to fire off some flares. Normally, they only carry 3 flares. But a flare, I take the analogy that a flare is something like a tree falling in the forest, all right? If there's no one there, does it make a noise? If you fire off a flare and no one can see it, what's the sense?
Right.
You don't want to fire a flare unless you can see lights so that someone knows you're there and sees a flare and knows it. But if you fire off 3 flares, that's all the flares you have. Now, if nobody else comes, if someone comes along an hour later, you don't have any flares to shoot, so fire them when you should. I mean, we're trying to get this education out so people will know what to do in the case of an emergency. Just don't go crazy and fire everything you have so you have nothing when the right opportunity comes along. Those sort of things are so important, like the float plan, letting people know where you're going to be, because he'll tell you the same thing when you're flying. You know, 10 square miles might equal 10 miles by 10 miles might equal 100 square miles. Mm-hmm. But that goes pretty fast after a day of you know, current at 1 mile an hour. That expands and expands and expands. Things have to be done very quickly, but at the right time. You need an education to do that. And we provide that, and it's for free.
Yeah, you know, and like you said, Bob, one of the biggest things is let somebody back home know where you're going.
Float plan.
Write it down. Put it on the kitchen table. You know, a simple piece of paper to inform people. Hey, we're going out here to go fishing. You know, and people at least have a start. You know, like you said, because the current moves you.
Yeah.
And at least you have a start point. The Coast Guard can calculate at that point in time. Hey, okay, they were out here at this time. They should be about here. And at least they know where to start looking. Same with us. I mean, we've been called in on many rescues, and we have to know where to start looking. Right. Because I will tell you, if you haven't seen the Gulf of Mexico from the air, it's huge. And boats are small. You know, and particularly if you lose your boat and fall out of a boat, a human being in the Gulf of Mexico is like a drop on the beach. I mean, it's really pretty small to try to find a human being floating in the water. So, you know, everybody should write down some kind of, as you call it, a float plan.
Yeah.
And inform, because, I mean, a lot of people do that with flying. I mean, you know, we
have to need a flight plan.
Yeah, you have to do a flight plan. And that way at least you know where I'm going. And that would be
a more recent accident happened like that, not accident, but a catastrophe, where three NFL football players left Tampa and went out fishing, mm-hmm. and the boat tipped over. And the two of them tried to swim for land. It was about a mile and a half away, never made it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where they ended up. And the third one, the boat tipped over. He was hanging onto the engine when they found him. But the most amazing thing was the size of the life jackets. They only had children's life jackets on that mm-hmm. vessel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all of these things here could be avoided if the people had some kind of an education, and that education comes around with licensing. And licensing is really the only way to go to force people to do it, we think anyway.
Yeah. All right. Well, we are unfortunately out of time. We're going to have to leave the conversation there for now. But thank you so much, Bob and Clint, for joining us in studio today and really helping educate us on what we all should be doing when we go out on the water to be safe.
Thank you.
Bob Bellevue is a senior navigator and recently retired boating instructor with the United States Power Squadron. He's been involved with chapters up in Boston and down here in Marco Island. And Clint Dawson is president of the Sundown Patrol of Lee County. And Clint, tell us again where folks can go online to find out more and maybe volunteer.
If you go online to sundownpatrol.org, that's our website. You can find any information about us, about the hangar dance, just volunteering. We would appreciate all help we can get.
All right. Well, that is, again, all the time we have, but thank you so much for listening. We're taking a short break, and when we return, Fort Myers singer-songwriter Frankie Colt joins us in studio for conversation about her music and to perform live. Today marks the premiere of her new music video for her song Lion's Heart. We'll hear that song and other selections just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.